On today's episode of Lucas Inside Track, I'm joined by Tatiana Abeya. Tatiana is the founder and managing director of Goombook, a social enterprise dedicated to sustainability. She launched the business back in 2009, and since then, the UAE with Tatiana has done some remarkable things, but still not enough. On today's show, we open the lid on what it is to be sustainable in 2025 and what all of us really should be doing to make that difference. Tatiana, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm delighted to have you. I love the fact that we're in sync as well. We're greening it up today.
It was meant to be.
How are you? How are things going?
I'm good. I'm very excited. Lots of things are happening.
That's right. You're going to see a minister after this meeting, right? You're going to opt to...
Yes. Not a usual day.
So it's not a typical Friday for you, just hanging out with ministers.
No, I wish. It's something very special. Today, there's the launch of a new initiative by the Ministry of Tolerance and Coexistence to raise awareness about culture, heritage, and nature aspects on how they come together. It's an aspect that we forget. We think that nature, to think about nature is an extra in our life. But actually, the human race had to deal with nature since day one. Ice, snow, the sea, rain, desert, how to survive and thrive in different ecosystems.
100%. Look, I'm very excited to have you on board. I've never had anyone on sustainability come on the show. So I'm here to learn. I don't know much about it. I have an elephant in the room in case I ask any weird questions. But the Goombook, right? It's a great name. It's an unusual name, right? And when we spoke and I did a bit of research, it comes from this region, Goom, right? Yes. The name, and which means to stand up. In some of the tribal Bedouin language, it means to stand up or to sort of stand up against something. Is that right?
Absolutely. So when we started Goombook, we were looking for a name that would make a difference, not the usual green something or eco something. And in the research about the UAE and the region, the Goom word came up as, yes, the root of it is actually to stand up. Who? Even in the Bible, you know, when Jesus says Talita Hum, it's really stand up. And so stand up for your rights, stand up for what you believe in, stand up for a better environment. But also the tribe or the region, the families traveling around the desert, the Bedouins, they were called Go. And it was a very similar way of living. The Go was at the origin a family, but anyone could join it. Mm. So it was very inclusive. Oh, they were very much in sync with nature. Very careful about the resources, water, food.
They would recycle a lot of it, right?
Recycle. I mean, it was really, they would not call it that way, but it was a circular economy way of life where nothing would go to waste.
Beautiful.
And if you look at how we eat today, it's all about actually consuming and wasting. So Goom and Goombook was about, let's look at where we come from, by here, Yarrabwat. Let's look at the heritage, the culture, how we used to do things, and how we can go back to that in the modern time, but also trying to be a community again, a tribe again.
Yeah. How's your Arabic?
Very bad.
You speak like 8 languages. Arabic isn't one of them?
I can't. It doesn't.
So you speak French, right? Italian, Spanish.
English is obviously amazing.
Yeah. Any other languages you want to throw on there?
No, I can't.
That's amazing.
No,
it's very, very impressive. We always start with the mug. I always ask my guests about their mug. So what does this mug tell me about you? I think I can read it, but it's great. If you tell everyone, you know, those who are listening in.
This is very special because it's a bottle that has been made out of plastic waste collected from the ocean. We produced it for MENA Oceans, which was the first ever ocean event for the region. We launched it back in 2023. Nice. And this bottle basically can become a mug. So it has a double functionality. I open this up, it's a regular bottle. Mm-hmm. But if I open the middle part.
Hey, look at that, huh? Look at that.
Coffee, my tea.
And you know I'm stealing that, right? That's going on the mantelpiece behind you.
Okay. Joyce.
Amazing. I love it. Sometimes I get some resistance from some of my guests. They're like, no, you can't have it. But no, I'm absolutely stealing that.
You need a sustainable mug.
How do you feel about mugs in general? Do you think they're a sustainable way of drinking?
Of course.
Yeah.
You need more mugs. I mean, we need to stop this whole, single-use cups we get at the coffee shops. We need to go with our own reusable mugs.
You see, at Lucas Inside Track, we take things very seriously. Sustainability is up there. That's why we have our own reusable mugs. Fantastic.
Well, sometimes we are. Sustainable, we are annoying.
There you go. And it's the small things that matter, like we'll talk about later. And I've done my research on you. So small things that matter, not just the big stuff. So you always start one of your shows or your podcasts with, okay, I have to tell you, I'm not the tree hugger. That's usually how you always start, right? An elephant in the room, everyone who's outside of sustainability, who doesn't work in it, they look at people who work in sustainability as typically, unfortunately, as a person, as tree huggers. You don't like that perception because it's infactually correct for yourself as well as for many other people. Because the truth is, you came to the region in 2009, correct me if I'm wrong, right?
2005.
Goombook was studying, you're right. 2005, you came to the region, you came from Europe, right? And you had no inkling that you were ever going to set up an enterprise, a social enterprise around sustainability until you came to a desert, right? So what was that like for you? You were going from the greenery of, I'm guessing you were in, you were in Italy. Okay. So you were in Italy. Beautiful. I love Italy. My mom's Italian, by the way. That's where the Luca comes from.
Oh, from where?
Yeah. But she comes from Como in the north. But my Italian is worse than my Arabic. So let's not go down that road. So you're in Italy and then you come to the desert into Dubai. And there's not much going on in 2005. You have some buildings and all, but it's fair to say that sustainability wasn't high on anyone's agenda back then.
No, sure.
So 4 years later, you set up Goombook. Okay. So talk to me a little bit about the thinking process of someone who's never been interested in sustainability to basically creating the first, was it the first at the time? Yeah, the first ever sustainability or social enterprise in the region. What was that like?
I've always loved nature without knowing it, right? We used to go to the sea, to the beach. We used to go to the mountain, the trek in the countryside. So it's not that I was not a tree hugger, but I gave nature for granted. It was there, accessible, beautiful. When I came here, I realized how much I missed it, but also that I had to relearn what nature is here. And going around the 7 hours, because the first years living in Dubai was about, where are we? What are the seven Emirates, the different, the mountain, the sea? So beautiful. I remember going to the beach with this perfect white sand, with the dunes going all the way to the beach, and this Maldive color. And it's something that I didn't know about. And I fell in love with the countryside, with the dunes, the different colors of the sand, you know, the change between Dubai and driving towards LA.
Yeah.
And then the mountains and the rocks and the wadis. It was full discovery. And at the same time, I was looking at nature and I was like, oh, there are flowers, there are shrubs, there are trees. Nobody tells you about this nature, or at least 20 years ago, nobody would talk about it. And this was one aspect. The other aspect is I came here with my husband and our newborn. Our first son was just 2 months old.
Okay.
And so as a mother, you know, your life changes as parents. Everything changes. You need to start being responsible, not only for yourself, but for this new life that is there. And you start asking questions. How's the air? How's the food? How's the water? What am I putting on my son's skin? What are all these products? And then you start, because at that time we didn't have Instagram. It was more about friends talking to other friends and telling you, you know, chemicals are not good. And so the community aspect of that time was very important, talking with other mothers. And in Dubai, what is incredible is when you come here, there's this need to meet people, because you're new every day.
You have to connect. You need to connect.
First thing, we connect. So you have mom goose and Italian goose and Spanish goose, my husband's Spanish. So I have all these different communities to tap to. And the whole aspect of being parents and understanding the future of our children, interesting. But there were not many options. There was sprouting here and there. You have the first ever organic food and cafe.
Yeah.
It was something like crazy and super expensive at that time, because they were the first ones that had to import small quantities. And imagine for the cost of buying organic fruits at that point. Some supermarkets niche would give you BPA-free baby bottles.
What's BPA?
Exactly. So it's a chemical that helps plastic to be more flexible and not to break. So if the BPA falls, it's not going to break because of the DPA.
Okay.
So again, my question was exactly what you said. What's the BPA? why are bottles, some of them BPA free and others are not? So research on this new internet right?
Yeah. Trying to figure it all out.
And I found out that in Europe and the US, there was a lot of information about how to be more eco-friendly. That was the word, actually, at that time. To go green or be eco-friendly.
Yeah.
I hear you would, you know, start talking about kiwis. Oh, come on. This is a fashion from Europe and the States. It's going to fade. It's just a set of EU products. And so that's where I understood that the awareness was missing. And also some products, some companies were trying to come into the market, but because there was no interest, they could actually not sell that product. So there was really a gap. And the first idea for Boombook was actually to be a green directory. So we launched as an eco-friendly green directory. And what's funny is that in 1 or 2 months, we got more than 1,000 subscriptions of products on the directory, but zero views. So there was a need from a business point of view of showcasing products and services, and people were just not interested.
Yeah.
So at that point, we had to shift completely what Boombook was into an awareness campaign.
Got it.
So the profit parts at the beginning was, we're going to set up a directory. We're going to be a profit-making company.
It wasn't a non-profit. It wasn't.
I didn't even know what a social enterprise was, right? So then we realized that between awareness was not making any money and we needed to go into sponsorships. So you look at sponsorships and you're nobody and you're Italian and you go to local companies and you said, please support. It was like, why should we support you? What is this thing? It's so new. So basically Goombook for the first 6 years was a voluntary based entity where I had amazing women who would help me and support. But there was no money. And this to keep it alive and to justify a license for 6 years, I was saying that we were working as a not-for-profit because we didn't want to make money. We really wanted people to change.
Yeah.
And change their mindset. Yeah. And to understand that it's not a faith. It was not a faith to go green. It was a necessity. It was definitely a need. But for that, we had to change completely the narrative. If 15 years ago, I would ask you, what are people talking about when they talk about going green? Saving the polar bear, saving the Amazonic forest, switch off try to reduce the heating aspect of homes, right? And electricity and water. In the Arab world, what does that mean? Nothing. Bacola bears is somewhere else. Amazonic forest is somewhere else.
How do you make it? How do you make it important?
Relatable,
yeah, right? So we had to change the whole narrative. Talk about the desert. Talk about the sea. Talking about water, but where is water coming from here? Desalination. What's the impact of desalination? Massive need for energy, and at the same time, all the brine going back into the sea with a quite important impact.
And back then, there was only one sewage plant, right?
Yes.
Back then,
So people had to go a long, long way in order to... So they ended up sort of dumping into the sea, right? I mean, they sort of putting...
Absolutely.
And that creates its own problem.
Basically, trucks had to queue to reach that sewage plant for 2 to 3 days.
It's unbelievable.
Imagine the poor drivers of those trucks.
Especially in the middle of summer.
It was not salt. They started, as you said, dumping into the sea, and that was incredible. Yeah. And that's where we managed to start changing mindsets. And I remember after 3-4 years, I met a gentleman at Dubai Municipality, I think, and he looked and he was like, you're still here?
You haven't left.
I'm
still determined. Before I go any further, Tatiana, I always ask my guests for a safe word. Any question they don't feel comfortable answering?
Okay.
Do you have a safe word?
Octopus.
Oh, okay. I like that. You're the first person to come up with octopus. Why octopus?
It's our mascot, Ndumbuk.
Is it? Okay.
Yes, you know, the octopus has main brain, but then each tentacle has its own brain, so they're able to think and react on their own.
Very nice.
It has 3 hearts.
Oh.
So I love it.
Something about cows have three stomachs or something along those lines. Octopus, have you heard about the octopus theory? Talking about octopus? something about you have it, like there's a book out there that talks about you need to have 8 things going on at the same time in order to be successful. I don't know where that came from, but I just thought it was contextually relevant. I'd mention it right now.
Well, I love it. We have one at 16.
You guys have got a lot of campaigns going on. I've seen it. You got Save This, Save That, Save the Butts campaign. Yeah, I love that. But look, I love people like you because you sort of reinforce all the positive good stuff about what it is to be human, to care about Mother Nature, to care about this planet, to look forward and protecting generations. There aren't enough people like you. Unfortunately, you're in the minority, okay?
Changing.
I'm glad it is, but as of today, 2025, unfortunately, there are more people still like me who are we're aware, but we're not doing as much as we should be doing. Let's be honest. I can do more. We can all do more.
Well, so
why are you not?
Right. That's another conversation. And we actually, you know what? Let's get into it. So I think there is a lot of people know that I don't think it's so much an awareness issue. And one of the questions I have later tackles it. It's more about what I call cognitive dissonance, where it's the behaviors and attitudes are inconsistent. So you'll kind of go around and you'll do what you need to do at the time of doing it without having to consistently having to do it. So there's a sort of inherent laziness and dissonance between what you know you should be doing and what you are actually doing.
So you don't feel the urge of doing?
I feel like I'm on trial right now. look, I do my bit, but I always feel like I can do more. I'll give an example. I used to do a lot of flying, right? It's for business to go to Saudi. Did I need to go every single time from Dubai to Riyadh for a meeting? No, I could have done it online, right? But I would still do it anyway because the principle of business face-to-face, especially for Saudis, is important. So again, you make a decision. What's good for me is actually to go to the business meeting. What's good for the planet is probably to stay at home and doing a bit on video. So there are small decisions that we make and some big decisions every day that we make. Some feel bad about it, right? And some have got used to not feeling bad about it anymore. You know what I mean? I still feel bad about it, but I know I should be doing a lot
more. It's the first step to feel bad. I'm happy you feel bad because a lot of people don't feel bad at all.
Yeah.
They don't even care.
Yeah.
So the fact that you care, you're already a step further.
Yes. So when we go, for example, supermarkets, right? All the plastic bags and all that kind of, we don't use plastic bags or all that kind of stuff. But a lot of people still use plastic bags, right? So you see them. You see some people at the check-in,
yeah.
They brought their own and some haven't. And it's mainly 70% still use plastic, 30% bring in their own. So it's a good sort of, you know, barometer of where people are at.
It's changing. It's slow, but it's changing. But the good thing is that the government is really supportive. And a lot of policy that come into place, bans.
Yeah.
Each Emirates has its own legislation.
Does it really? Okay. But isn't that important to have standardization, not just locally, but also globally in order for things to get...
To improve?
Well, that's what the UN are trying to do with our treaty, the plastic treaty. It's something that unfortunately is really hard to have all countries agree on it.
Yeah.
But it's coming, the fact or that there is a plastic treaty that needs to be signed and the countries need to agree on, it's already a massive step forward.
Yeah. So we started this by me saying I'm a massive compliment to you that there should be more people like you, right? This is how it all started. And in every company, you'll see one or two people, maybe if the companies are a bit more advanced, they'll have a sustainability team or person, which is amazing, which is fantastic. But they still seem to be, it's not a business decision yet for it to be an integrated part of the company's ecosystem.
One. I think it's also depending on the size of the company. From what I see, the biggest problem is with the SMEs. One, it's an awareness problem. They don't even know that there is a whole sustainable development agenda.
Yeah.
And two, they might not have the budget.
Mm.
So for them to think, oh my God, sustainable development, sustainable goals, I need someone to look at my own sustainability. I need to have a sustainability strategy. I need a person for it. Can you afford that person?
Mm.
That's the problem.
So you think that's the biggest cost or interrupt? Is that the biggest challenge for sustainability not being adopted further? Is the cost of it?
Two things. The not knowing about sustainability and the need for it. And second, the cost. Because for an SME, even startup to tell them you need to embed sustainability in your business plan, it's like, one more layer, you know? It's complicated. And there's no enforcement.
So if someone asks you, what does sustainability mean to you? How? Because it's a big word. There's so many things that go into it. What, in its simplest form, what is sustainability?
the simplest form is to think about the future. Sustainability is to guarantee a future for humans in the next 50, 100 years. As simple as this. To give it a bit more depth, sustainability is when the three pillars come together in harmony of profitability. I like to call it prosperity, so how businesses are able to stay alive and prosper, nature, and people. We need these three things to be in harmony. I need to make sure that my business is not harming people and not harming nature. It's there. So the meeting point in the middle is sustainability. Happy people, healthy nature, and good businesses.
And give me a percentage of where we're at, or score us out of 100. How are we doing?
Not so well.
Humor me. What are we looking at?
I couldn't give you a percentage. What is really interesting is if you go into the Sustainable Development Goals, they have a number of reports on how different countries are doing. So you see some countries doing really well on the social aspect, others on the climate aspect, and other on the innovation and industry part and infrastructural part. It's very hard for one country to do well in the three pillars. Yeah. But it's moving. It's coming. Now, the Sustainable Development Goals are about to end. The agenda is for 2030. So now we're already looking at the next framework. Once the Sustainable Development Goals are going to be done, and again, who knows what the report will be 2030,
yeah.
That's the next step.
Okay.
What are we going to ask people to do? These goals are saying that we need to change the way we do business today to make sure that our planet is not going to go above 1.5 degrees increase in temperature, which we've already been told that it's already going above. We might not make the 1.5. We are already looking at a 1.7, 1.8. Some really bad forecasts are even looking already at a 2 degrees increase. So what's next? You know, this is where we need to work together a bit more. But look at what's happening today in the world. There's so much disagreement on economies and politics. How are we going to...
Renewable energy, right? We see what Trump keeps doing in the US right now. Question I have to you is, you seem to be an optimistic person.
Yes.
Right?
We need to.
You need to stay optimistic. But do you sometimes, and this is challenging, but do you sometimes have those days where you're like, I'm doing so much. I'm not making enough change. And does it get to you? Does it bother you? Does it affect you?
Of course. There are good days and there are bad days.
So how do you deal with it?
When I have my bad day, I will take it and I will try to understand how I can make it a better day, if I can find something new to do or a different way of doing things. This is why Gumbook is so complicated for people to understand. It's because Gumbook does a lot of things. I have the campaigns on one side and we have more than 16 campaigns here now. Because every time I have a bad day, I end up thinking...
Let's have a campaign.
Yes, there's something else that we can do. So one day it would be, you know, saving the cigarette butts from the beach, but not to remove the cigarette butt from your beach below. It's about talking about it in a way to use and to people of, this is plastic. One. Two, this is harming animals. Three, this is harming nature. Four, there's a solution. We can actually recycle them and make something good out of it. So I always need that solution fight. This is a very personal way of thinking. I always need a solution, not only at work, my daily life. Otherwise, it's hard for everyone. You have work, you have families, we always have bad days. So for me, I need to find a solution.
Okay.
So for problems related to sustainability here, I need the solution. Once I see the solution, like, great. We need to start talking about the problem because then we have a solution and people will feel good about it. We don't want to depress people.
No.
I don't want to go around and telling people, this is so bad and our kids are not going to have food and water and clean air to breathe and it's a disaster. First, then I'm not going to invite you anymore to dinner parties. Finished. I'm going to have a very lonely life. Second, I'm going to be very upset because the moment you always talk negatively, it influences you and your team and everyone else.
It's a great insight, though, what you shared about people need to feel like there is a solution. Otherwise, it's kind of hopeless and they will give up hope and then they'll let things continue to carry on as they are.
Absolutely. So it's about that. The bad days are about finding a solution. Once it's there, it's sharing it and making it a positive.
So you mentioned awareness a couple of times, how there isn't enough awareness on sustainability. Would you argue that if you of a more privileged background, you would have a higher level of awareness than if you're not privileged? Is that fair?
In general, yes, it's true. Also because when you have a difficult life, your priority is about sustaining your family, sustaining yourself, put food on the table, you know? So I cannot tell you, come on, don't use a plastic bag or reduce your carbon footprint. What are you talking about? I need to feed my family first. I need to find a doctor for my kids. So it's a privilege to be able to talk about sustainability, but it's also a responsibility. So yes, it's true that for more privileged people, it's something that it's easier to be aware of.
They can go on these, let's say your school, you can go on these nice trips. You can learn, you know, things practically.
Absolutely. If you go to a school, that will have in the curriculum your sustainability. But then it's your responsibility to do something. You need to feel responsible. So the awareness is the basic.
But how do you get someone to feel responsible?
Because that's a big shift. I mean, in marketing, you talk about awareness, consideration, trial, purchase, loyalty, right? In sustainability, you've got awareness straight to implementation kind of thing, right? Doesn't matter if you consider it or not. It's about doing something about it. Because, you know what I mean? It's about getting you in order to create and do action. So how do you go from awareness to action, to doing something?
It's a very good question. So a few months ago, I had the opportunity to do a master class for a business school to their master students. And it was a master in entrepreneurship. So they were all there to become entrepreneurs.
Nice.
And I went there to talk about social entrepreneurship. You should have seen their faces. They were not even interested in the room. So I asked them, I'm like, okay, so do you know what a social enterprise is? Yes. Okay, why these faces? What do you think? Oh, yeah, it's to do good. It's charity thing.
It's like getting blood out of a stone. Yeah, they're just...
So I realized that they didn't see the opportunity of doing good as a business opportunity. So I think here the main problem is that there's a separation between being responsible, doing the good thing, to actually being successful.
Yes.
And
they don't coexist. They're separate.
They think.
Yeah.
But if you look at some of the social enterprises we have around the world, they're massively successful and they make a lot of profit. Goombook has decided to be a social enterprise, not for profit. But this is my decision. But a social enterprise doesn't mean you're a charity. It means that your business is a responsible business. Mm-hmm. And honestly, in the future, all businesses will be social enterprises. This is the ones we need to...
Look, there needs to be more of you running around, that's for sure. Running businesses, very similar. The world will be definitely a better place. Do you feel like since you've been here, since 2005, is the UAE's role in sustainability? Because historically speaking, you look at it, it's a desert. And from the outside, it doesn't have nature, although it does. We all know it has nature, right? And you're going to tell me about the bottlenose dolphins. You're going to tell me about... I'm with you. But from the outside, it doesn't look like the UAE has a real right to talk about these types of issues. Because it's also a small country versus some of the bigger ones. And how can it impact global issues such as, you know, the ozone layer, et cetera, et cetera. But have you seen in the period that you've been here how the UAE is kind of like punching above its weight in so many different ways? And it's mainly because of the ratio between the public sector, government sector, and the private. Is that a fair assessment? Or is it because of something else? Is it to do with the vision of the rulers here in this region?
First, for sure, there's the division. And the vision of the mid Sheikh Zayed was including nature. He was a huge nature lover, and I would say he was the first environmentalist of the UAE. So it's part of the heritage. Part of the life in this region is in sync with nature. I mean, they had to learn from nature what they could do and not do, conserve resources, water, very precious, animals, how they were also depending on those trees they would find in the desert, the mangroves on the coastline, understanding that during the winter they could live nearby the sea. In the summer, they had to go back to the mountains. So the link to nature is here. I think the positioning of the UAE is we have the leadership, we have the vision, we have the means. They are coming from an economy that's oil-based, but that it wants to transition, specifically Dubai. Dubai has been looking at differentiates their economy 30 years ago, yeah. Right? And yes, they were behind maybe back in 2005, but when the international community has started talking about climate change and biodiversity, the UAE has come forward immediately. It's the first country in the whole Middle East that has signed the Paris Agreement. So the vision is there. They might be a small country, but they have a huge voice. And they've hosted the COP28. Mm. They've had the biggest success ever with the biggest COP ever and with the great outcome of, you know, really publicly saying that we need to transition away from fossil fuels. And they've been able to bring so many different countries to the table. So here is where you have a very important aspect of the sustainability, environmental, climate diplomacy. Mm. How you embed this into the way you talk to the world, you do politics, and you do trade. And so I think they are way, way ahead in that. They've passed legislation in the past 2 years that has unheard of, and people can't even believe that.
Such as?
So the last one that is coming into force now in May, it's the climate law, where basically all major companies in the UAE will have to report on their carbon emissions mandatorily. And if they don't, they will be fined up to $2 million. This is fantastic.
Yeah, especially for those SMEs that you talked about, those naughty SMEs that aren't focusing about sustainability.
Well,
they're going to have to be.
SMEs are coming next. So I feel that we are in the right. I feel I am in the right place. So Perrier, when you were asking me, you came to the UAE and you come from a different background, right? And I did architecture when I was
interior designing and architecture and all that stuff.
I was designing jewelry, so talk to me to this. When you say that I might be someone different from the rest, but actually I feel like really like you. I'm one of those people who had to learn, and I'm learning every day because that's not my background. So I surround myself with the right people and the experts that for me it's an opportunity to continuously learn about what we can do. And this is why I always tell everyone, you can do it too. And it's not, nobody expects you to be perfect tomorrow. It's just about starting. Because the moment you start, it's like going to the gym, you know, you start walking on the treadmill. And then, you're curious about that thing. And you're going to start exercising your other muscles. It's the same thing.
So how do we do this? Because everybody wants to feel that they can help, but they don't. So what is that trick? The small little things that they can do. Because they can do it for the first 2 or 3 days. Then the behavior goes back, they return back to how they used to, and nothing ever seems to move forward. So what's your advice to a lot of people out there who have good intentions, but honestly, they will try, but then they just eventually get up. How do we convince them to do this as a real character and behavioral change?
I think we need to link this to our passion. What are you passionate about, right? What is something that you do every week for yourself? Sports, music, what is it?
Hmm. Me?
Yeah.
I like doing this. To know people on this couch is one of my favorite things. I go to the gym. I love doing that. I love playing sports. I still enjoy going out with my friends and my wife, of course.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what do you use? What do you do?
My plastic bottle that I've never used since 2005, because now I use a nice... The problem is a lot of these places, like in where I play football, for example, they provide you with plastic bottles.
Okay, so you answer my question.
So you drink plastic bottles.
The nice thing you're going to do, the next thing...
is take another bottle.
First, but second, you're going to go and talk to the company where you go and play football. And say, guy,
done.
Can we install a machine to actually... leave a water.
Well, that's a great idea. Why don't they do that more often?
Because nobody else.
Oh, that's awesome.
No one else.
But do you not think this should come from the top, or this should be bottom up? So that's the other thing where I always struggle. I always think someone else should be. I mean, who am I, some rambling guy who just goes to play football on a Saturday,
to go and ask, can you get a water machine installed?
So you're a customer. You're a person who's there, and you might be yourself, and then you're a client, and you create a critical mass.
I'll get all the guys to get that.
Yeah, you do, and you can even tell them.
Maybe before the match, because afterwards we're a bit stinky. I'm not gonna lie.
You can even tell them that you come together as a group. How many are you playing football?
Well, it depends. Sometimes we're 9 aside, so 18 people.
18 people. You can actually pay for this machine. These machines cost 1,000 euros. Yeah. Out of 18 people, it's nothing.
Yeah, and you know what? There's just one game out of many.
Right.
Hundreds of people every day.
Out of the two, on the few passions you told me. First month sport, that's where you didn't have any fights.
Yeah.
You think it's small, but if you look at the daily
practice,
stick bottles on those fields, it's disgusting.
Yeah.
So a huge impact already. Second, you have this amazing communication tool. What? That's your way to, you know, tell the world, hey.
That's why you're here, man. That's why you're here.
So you're doing something.
There we go. Now I feel better about myself. That's the other thing. You've got a lot of times, I have a friend of mine who also works in sustainability. You know Elena, we have a mutual friend.
Yeah.
So I would always feel really bad when I would hang out with Elena.
Oh, yes.
Because she would make me feel bad because I'm not doing 1, 2, 3. So that's the other thing. People don't like to be told off. Or being told that they're not doing enough. We've got enough stuff going on in our life to have another layer. So how do we make sustainability people, us, more friendly with how we encourage behavioral change?
Listen, I think it
makes sense.
The same way I come to you and I tell you, oh, you should try this new protein powder. It's super cool for you.
Yeah.
Sustainability is the same thing. Hey, you know, I found this amazing solution. So back to what we were saying earlier, it's about solutions. So instead of telling you you're doing the wrong thing, it's about, hey, you can do this better.
Let's get crack on with the questions and the balls.
Hi, everyone. I really hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Thank you so much for watching and listening. Throughout my career, I've met a lot of people that have anxiety when it comes to public speaking. If you're someone that has that anxiety or nervousness and has always wanted to be more confident in public speaking, but you're also not sure where to go or how to start, the good news is I might be able to help. I have 20 years' experience working in corporate communication. I'm a former regional CEO, and I've helped to win over 80 different clients through new business pitches. With so many online trainings based on theory, I wanted to share what's helped me in the business world. I've launched my own training program called Master Pitch. The 7-module course covers everything you need to know, whether it's learning how to really understand the audience, how to deliver real impact, or how to effectively storytell, I've got it covered. With practical tips and real examples, you can immediately start turning that anxiety into confidence. Also, in a world of AI, there's never been a more important time to invest in your personal brand and in developing your public speaking. For more information, go to lucaalam.com or drop me an email at info@lucaalam.com. Right, let's get back to the episode.
It's scared.
Nah, you shouldn't be.
Let's see.
Well, you reused that bag as well, so there you go, you see? It's a reusable bag. Do you play golf? Are you a golfer?
Actually, I'm so bad.
Really?
Yeah. It's not my thing.
It's not your thing.
Local versus global narrative. How do we accommodate for the indigenous? Oh. Well, from a Google point of view, we believe that we need to start from understanding where we are, the local culture and the heritage. So from the name we have to the solutions we find, we always look at the indigenous aspects of plants, shrubs, people.
The gaff tree.
The catch.
I love the gaff tree.
The UN National Tree by Baby. So I think indigenous means understanding what is indigenous. So the way they were people live here, the people, the way they cook, the food they eat that comes from here, and try to keep that alive in the country, not with modern times to forget about it. Unfortunately, in your question, it's local versus global.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because you've got, if say the UAE does an amazing job, again, it's only within the UAE. It doesn't impact the rest of the world, or even Saudi, or even Qatar. How much room is there for local, for local policies to include the indigenous, but actually globally, if it doesn't have the same effect? You know what I'm trying to say? Like, where's the balance? Because you've got to almost standardize a global policy across the board.
It's true, but you cannot standardize everything because you need to look at the differences around the globe. And this is where there are difficulties in its sustainable development, because what I ask the North, I cannot ask the South. What I ask people living in the ice, I cannot ask people living in the sand, right? So you need to look at local, thinking about global. So we need to think small in order to have a global impact. We need to be able to localize things. And this is where it's not possible to ask people to do the same thing in the UAE and in Canada.
Mm.
It's not possible. But Indigenous is also looking at Indigenous community.
Mm-hmm.
And around the world, we need to make sure we protect those. Here, we don't have as much as that defending, for example, on nature. So we plant microbes in the UAE, and we work with different government entities to first try to look at conservation and then hopefully restoration, right?
Yes.
So to replant in certain areas. When we talk to global entities who do the same thing, they have to deal with indigenous communities, because those indigenous communities in South America and Indonesia, they leave sites to the mangroves. Their livelihood depends on them. So when you talk about indigenous, it means different things in different places. And that's where the local policy is very important, but it needs to be part of a global.
So read the question again.
Okay. Local versus global narrative. How do we accommodate for the indigenous? Well, let's look at where do we do business?
Yeah.
Where is your business base? Where is your life base? And start thinking. I need to eat more local foods.
Mm-hmm.
I need to start as getting more employees locally.
Mm-hmm.
I need to employ local suppliers. You need to start thinking local to have a global impact.
Globally, who's running the show when it comes to sustainability, climate control?
Europe.
It's Europe.
Europe at a very high price, because it slows the economies and sometimes it takes years to bring all the countries together to agree. And it's a lot of money and a lot of efforts to invest into, you know, the famous Green Deal and the transition to a cleaner energy. So it's hard, but Europe is really doing a lot for it.
It's devil's advocate, elephant in the room. Can anything happen without America's approval? Can the world move forward if America is not fully on board?
Climate, honestly, we cannot move forward without the big economies, China, the US. We need to have everyone on board, because otherwise you have tons of countries, huge efforts, huge investments. But then you have one of the bigger emitters emitting more and more. So it's not working.
Exactly.
So now we need to do this all together.
Mm.
And we'll get the US.
All right. Next question. Yeah.
Let's
roll on.
Okay. Politics and climate change.
Look at that. Look how they're coming together, huh? Come on, Tatiana.
Yeah.
Context matters. Brilliant.
Alumnus affair or green shoots or blah, blah. Green shoots or blah.
Okay, so the question, so just to read it again for those who are listening in.
So politics and climate change, alumnus affair or green shoots or love?
Yeah.
In between.
Yeah, you can't go in between.
It cannot be a loveless affair.
It feels like it right now, especially from the US. And the policies that Trump's coming up with and he's...
I would say it's a person. It's not, unfortunately, it influences politics. But when Trump came into power, you had a lot of voices from the US saying, we won't change. Our companies won't change their strategy. It will continue our own sustainability journey. Yeah. Our climate action and that will change. So the problem is that the incentives are not there anymore. Another big issue is a lot of areas were protected and he's removed that protection. Plus some areas there was, you know, a van to drip in them, and now that dam has been removed, so drilling is allowed again. So that's where I think the power of private sector is, where you have those leaders who leave massive companies, and some companies put together have bigger GDPs than countries. So, you know, private sector plays a very important role. They're independent. Again, the problem comes when you're talking about SAEs. They don't have all that.
Yeah.
But the huge corporations,
Dick. But the question here is talking about politics and climate change, right? And is it something that is a loveless marriage where it's just that everyone knows it's important, but no one's really doing anything about it, and so kind of they just keep drifting? Or do you feel like there is a renewed potential, because you're an optimistic person, that actually we are seeing green shoots of love where people are realizing, actually, no, let us actually make some changes. But then Trump comes along and all of a sudden starts signing off documents saying, you know what, we believe in coal, right? And all this kind of stuff. So where do you feel? Because from an optimistic perspective, I would love to say that everyone, the world leaders are coming together, everything's going to be great. I just don't see it. I feel like we've gone backwards when it comes to politics and enforcing real climate control.
I think the problem with climate and the environment is that it's something seen as a left-wing priority, which is a shame, because I believe nature and the nature we know today and climate need to be and everyone priority.
It's every wing.
and be completely detached from politics. It should not be part of a politician agenda. It should be everyone's agenda. So the love here is missing because suddenly we have a new president, right? What can we do? We need to have the other political forces around the world to push and stay strong on what they believe in, because the markets so far is still free and you still have, hopefully,
I love your hope.
Trade between countries, where if you want to trade with me, you need to have some sort of sustainability agenda. I will be able to buy your product in Europe now, only if your product is, let's say, forest free. You know, so some policies in areas of the world are still pushing and enabling climate action and environmental protection. So hopefully things have
so a... We're going to go with green shoots of love. We're
going to need them desperately.
All right, let's do it.
We cannot do so.
I'm with you.
Yes.
Fully. Let's move. Let's do the next ball.
Next ball. You get to be like really big in here. CSR initiatives are just corporate low-level checkbots. True or false? It used to be true. CSR 15 years ago was all about marketing and communication. And actually, the poor, you know, communication managers, they had this role down onto their head. He also had to lead our CSR department with no extra
department. It's basically them.
So it used to be something like this. Today, CSR is strategic, definitely. In Europe, for sure, it's actually strong policies are behind CSR. In the UAE also, there's a huge change. People are more aware. And they can read through, you know, they're just wanting 100 trees to make it. Do you know? You see it.
It's superficial. It's all. And there was a checkbox. And it was like, oh, what are you doing from CSR? It's like, oh, we're doing that. Great. Done. And they would move on. But you're seeing that change now.
It has changed. It has evolved into how do I engage my employees in a meaningful way? How is this linked to my purpose as a company? Linked to my core business? So if I'm into... I don't know, an industry or business related to oceans, I try to shift my CSR to, for my employees to understand what is our impact on the ocean? How can our company lower the impact and how can you help as employees, right? It needs to be part of a larger vision and you need to have a sustainability strategy within the company. Then CSR comes to life and makes sense. So it's not CSR alone. It's CSR, leadership vision, a purposeful-led company, strategy in place. So it's more strategic. If you don't see this being linked to the company, then that's where...
It feels off.
It's off, and sometimes it's a shame because it's a lot of effort and money, even if it's not having the right impact. Mm. Every year I'm going to do something different. No, stick to one thing. Is your main goal social impact? Then go for it and focus. Choose that entity that you want to support. Hire employees engaged, supporting with their time, not only with money. Same thing for the environment. Long-term vision.
Yeah. You know what's funny? When I used to interview a lot of people coming into the company, and these 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds, one of the only questions I'd ever ask, I'd always ask them, you know, anything you want to know and ask about. One of the first questions I'd always ask is, what do you do from a CSR perspective? It was always one of the very, very first questions. I never would ask that when I was starting out 25, whatever years ago. I just didn't care. I didn't know about it. It wasn't even top of mind. But what's encouraging is I'm seeing more and more as a differentiator to attract good young talent into a company based on how good you are from a CSR perspective, from a social perspective. So I was encouraged.
That's really nice.
There you go.
See, you have a fair way of giving your own impact.
I'm giving you the positivity, the optimism. you're rubbing off on me. I love it.
Next one. Technology and innovation advancements. Friend or foe to sustainability? No, friend.
So think about this. Technology advancements, right? Technology advancements typically is expensive.
True.
Right? And it can do some damage to...
That's the way I was. Good.
So there is a... It's not always environmentally friendly with all the technology advancements, and there's a cost involvement as well. So, but it can be used for good. So is it a friend or is it a foe to sustainability? Not as easy as you first thought. Uh-huh.
No, it's pity. We need to think that we need technology to do a lot of things, and it helps us a lot. Now, if we think that technology will take over other things, then no. For example, I'm going to give an example. When we talk about agriculture, for the past 10 years in the region, we've heard massive investments into vertical farming, a solution to food security in the region, right? What? First of all, hundreds of millions of dirhams to build these things in the desert that consume tons of energy to grow salad. Okay, and how much is my salad going to cost? Too much. So the normal consumer is not going to buy it. Why should I buy that when I have the beautiful salad coming from Lebanon? Nice and tasty. That doesn't work as a technology saying they're sustainable. It's a great technology to invest in, but don't put it to me as a sustainability solution.
Yeah, don't wrap it under that umbrella.
Exactly. But it is a solution for places where I don't have the possibility to access roof, and then maybe yes. So we need to take things with really a pinch of questioning, right? But another example is I need to monitor large forests. I need to plant trees. I have drones that can do in 1 hour the work of what 100 people would do in 10 days. Mm-hmm. That is amazing.
So the efficiencies, speed. Yeah, I'm with you.
So technology can definitely help you. One of our main initiatives is called regenerative agriculture. And we're looking at research in all the amazing universities we have in the region to look at how simple things can actually enable small farmers to better farm. And we're not looking at very expensive technologies. We're looking at accessible solutions and low cost. So something that a farmer that doesn't have so much money to invest into technology might not have tons of computers to manage, a whole technological farm. What can we do for this farmer to feel like, yeah, I can work better. I have a better harvest. My fruits are more nutritious. And my son wants to stay with me and work with me rather than do another career and become an accountant, because he feels that being a farmer is terrible. Working many hours, very hard, and but very little.
I mean, agriculture is an industry that's massively challenged because of technology advancements. You go back 200 years ago, everyone was plowing the fields. Now, less than 1% of people are actually involved in agriculture.
But you know, now, before, you had people in the field removing weeds. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, they're giving you a chemical that kills everything. That chemical is also killing the soil.
Yeah.
So after 10 years, my soil will be so poor. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's not worth anything. And my fruits and veggies are not actually helping.
But overall, you're saying technology and developments around it, despite the cost, is actually beneficial for sustainability.
It needs to be done the right way.
Yeah, but like with everything.
With everything. But we cannot think that only technology is a solution to the future. Yeah. Going back to what we were saying earlier, we need to look at the heritage of the local culture. I mean, here people used to grow food in the desert in a specific way. We need to follow that. Why are we growing water-intensive fruits and vegetables when we actually have species that require very little water? They can even take saline water from the sea and are very nutritious and considered superfood. Mm. So we need to sometimes think simple and look.
Just adapt.
Adapt. So here, everywhere in the world, we need to think of the technology as something that helps you. But
it's an option. It's an option, and that can enhance.
Even the word innovation. Innovation doesn't mean very expensive technologies. Innovation means ideas. Sometimes ideas are very simple.
Do you think AI, how it's basically everywhere already, right? The knowledge that AI has around things like sustainability is going to help people with the awareness, with the giving ideas on what to actually do about it. Do you see? And have you thought about how Goomba can utilize AI further to sort of give more of an insight into how people can help save the planet?
We're looking into it. For sure, AI would be a big help. But again, we cannot rely fully on AI. Yesterday, I had the opportunity to visit a research vessel from the French Navy that is harbored here in Abu Dhabi, mm-hmm. in Zayed port. And they were showing us how they have all these different technologies to map the seabed. Mm. Why it is important? Because we need to understand if the seabed is rocky, sandy, if they can analyze water temperature, water salinity, understand the environmental impact of, you know, different things related to the ocean. But it's complicated. But they also have an AI fashion. And he was explaining how they cannot rely fully today on the AI function to analyze all the results coming through all the different technologies. Because sometimes you really need that human intelligence of being able to say, wait, the sonar is identifying something. It looks like it could be just a wreck, or it looks like it could be a school of fish. The AI will immediately tell you, don't think, it's not important. It will remove that from the whole report. Mm-hmm. While all the researchers in the vessel know that, no.
That's experience.
So it's not
human experience.
So we will have to work with AI always. It cannot take over fully.
But I'm just thinking about how do you utilize it to be a mouthpiece for pushing the sustainability agenda into every organization, into every government and ministry?
Well, it could help in reporting as a company, for example, or as a government, helping analyzing data. So, we have different data points, and it could be interesting for a government, for a company to understand where are my emissions coming. Or I have a lot of energy usage. Where is this energy usage coming from? So you input AI within your system, and it will detect the nice. So it's for water, it's for energy, it might be for your fuel. Analyzing how your fleet of couriers around the world can reduce their carbon emissions by looking at more efficient routes. So AI definitely is an amazing tool and can help, but it needs to be done with, again, strategy and some vision.
Very nice. I agree.
Next one.
Yeah, you know it.
How many balls?
There's 8 in total. I only had one guy who was able to put all of the golf balls on his hand. I'm not sure if you're going to try and do that.
Okay, now that you said that, I'll...
You're going to go for it. You're going to go for it. You're going to try and beat the record.
So sustainability, an issue of awareness for ineffective storytelling. Ooh. Both?
I know you can't say both. I know you're going to say both. The whole point is to get you to it's about getting deeper insights. So I think, as Luca, that sustainability narrative has been a one-directional style of approach of how to tell a story. If you don't do this, the world's going to come to an end. Or if we stop doing this now, if we don't start doing this now, there's going to be big repercussions. Typically, that's how the narrative has been, going back to your 15 years ago Greenpeace analogy and all that stuff, right? I think how we communicate sustainability can be rethought. I'm talking globally here. I'm not talking about Goombook. I'm talking globally because it's a global issue at the end of the day. I think the storytelling aspect can be improved. And what is a good story? A story needs a beginning, a middle, and an end. A story needs a hero. A story needs a villain. Okay? You have a villain and you have a hero, right? We are all heroes, potentially, in our own story. But how do we communicate what we want people to do in a more effective way? Because the same approach, what we've been doing for 10, 15 years, you might be getting marginal improvements, a 5% more here, 2% more there. Is it enough? I don't think it is enough. You may correct me wrong, but I think how we communicate the issues around sustainability can be potentially rethought of.
Yes, I think.
That was the point of the question.
The problem here is that you have too many versions of sustainability. So people are like, why should I take it from you or for her? And when they seem two different things, but we both want to do something good.
Correct.
But I will tell you that, for example, PLAs, the replacement for plastic, could mean they're bad. But someone else might come to you and say, no, PLA is not the future.
Yeah. But these are tactics. These are tactics.
They're tactics, but they're beliefs. Yeah. So sustainability today has become almost a religion. Do you believe in it?
Yeah.
Or not?
Yeah.
Do you think it's something that is really real or no? You still have people who tell you climate change, it's not true, it's fake.
Yeah.
So
those ice caps are melting.
You it's very complicated. And I think here it's not really about the awareness and the storytelling, it's about unifying the message. Because for young students, is there so many voices, even on social media
and AI now as well,
and AI, they will tell you different things. Or they will tell you, yes, sustainability is this for these people, this for that people, but these think A and the other thing B, and then you have Z. What do I do?
It's a great insight that unifying a message around sustainability is very super important. Let's say we do that. Let's say we bring all of the voices into what would be the story that we'd want to create.
The story we want to create is that we are a global community, and we need to think that whatever I do in my country has an impact somewhere else. So it's not anymore about I recycle and I'm a good person and so we are good here. No, because if you have the next door country doing nothing, it's going to impact you as well. So if you think that, if I, let's say the opposite thing, if I pollute the air here, who cares? The air would be good somewhere else. No, it's the same air, it's the same water. We are the human race today, depending on a nature that sustains us.
In order to do that, and I'm with you 100%, the world needs to unite. People, cultures, nationalities need to unite. You could argue that in 2025, as we speak and we record this, the world has never been more divided rather than united across different things, whether it's wars, whether it's politics, whatever you call it. So how do you unify a world that's divided on such an important issue that can only be tackled by the global audience?
How can we bring everyone together to be at peace? Can you answer that question? Because sustainability cannot happen if we're not at peace. If I'm fighting for my rights, if I'm fighting for my country, if I'm fighting for food, how can I think about sustainability? So the first question is, how can we all be at peace? That's the first thing we need to do. I cannot ask someone today in a country at war to think about sustainability. There's no way. What we need also to understand is that a lot of conflicts also derive from climate change, where I have no way to sustain my family anymore. There's no more food. It's too hot or there's too much rain. My country is flooded. Well, the father of the family would have to go somewhere else to try to then send some money back to his family. Or the whole family, you have to move because there's no way to live there. The earth, the soil is so dry, I can't grow anything. My sea, the sea where my generation have been fishing and getting food from, that sea is dead. There's nothing else anymore because there's massive trawling going around and if all that fish goes to the rich countries. So I can't feed my family. What do? I have to leave. Today, we have more refugees from climate than from wars.
Wow.
But those refugees are the ones who are suffering also from local conflict. Because the moment I have no food, no water, no stability, conflict comes. So it's not all about sustainability. It's really, and sustainability cannot happen without peace. That's why in the 17 Sustainable Development Goals, there is peace. Without peace, nothing else can happen. How can I talk to you about education, women empowerment? There's no way. So for me, to answer your question is, how can we be at peace?
Love
it. I don't have the answer.
And I don't know the answer for your question.
Yeah, but look, it's a great insight.
Yeah.
It's a starting point.
It's a goal.
Yeah.
But the starting point, without peace, you can't do anything else.
No. Our goal,
yeah,
is peace.
Very nice. How are you doing with carrying all those balls in one hand?
Good.
Still?
Yeah.
You can, okay.
That's it.
You're going to go for number six.
Do women naturally make better normatives than men? Yeah.
Look at that. You talked about women empowerment just now. Look at that. It's almost a sign. Someone up there or someone around us is playing. Are women better environmentalists than men?
Listen, I don't want to generalize because it's not fair. But more or less, there are more women involved than men. One, I think it's genetically, women are more, they have that motherhood part where you want to care. And this is what happened to me. As I said, I never cared about nature. Suddenly I became a mother and I started asking myself, what's going to happen in the future? How I need to think about the future of my children. Are they going to have clean air, food? A roof, is the work going to be on fire? You start worrying. And it's part of our nature. For men, there's the practicality aspect. It needs to work, right? And today, sustainability is hard to make it work. So this is why it's hard to have more men involved. It needs to be profitable. Again, it's hard. It's coming, it's changing, but it's hard to make sustainability profitable for all. So I think it comes from the nature of women to care. But otherwise, I wouldn't like to generalize. Amazing. Even if we are 33 women at Google.
Yeah, so that's out of how many?
33.
Out of how many?
33.
Okay, so it's 100%. diversity is big in the book. Hire a man, hire a man.
We did, but you get a lot.
I'm not surprised. I can imagine that guy's first day in the office. That would be great. Imagine for a minute, every single CEO, top level, multinational, blue chip company, the CEO was a woman, right? How would that impact sustainability throughout the corporate world?
Well, going back to earlier when he's saying for sustainability we need peace, there is a study that shows that the more head of states being women, there is actually more understanding between country and more peace around the world. And this then trickles down to leading a company. More women, there is this, I would say, approach to communication and partnership and collaboration that comes through more than with men. That is a reality that comes from official studies.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not a scientist, and I wouldn't be able to give you the answers of the why, but this is a reality. So,
and it feels right as well. just in your gut, kind of feels right.
It does. And let's think about, you know, 200 or 300 years ago, you would have a lot of wars. Let's look at the old continent. You have, you know, tons of wars going on, men going to war, to fight. Who had to organize the village? The women, they had to find a way to make it run, find food, work all together, draw the kids. And so it's part of the upbringing, I think, of women. And till today, when the man has to leave and find a job, women are back there and they have to run not just the family, but everything around. So there is that spirit of working together as a community of women.
Do you think, though, that it's also quite limiting if females have to be the ones leading sustainability? Because ultimately, if you want to reach a tipping point and things will change, you need to get the men involved.
I don't think this is something not related to men. I think men are also involved and passionate about sustainability. It's just not a priority for them. I think the moment it's a priority as a business, as an entity, as a government, then they come on board because it's a reality. So it's not something they would fight, not at all. They just need it to be a reality, as something solid, something that can be actionable. Where is the action behind? What can I do? Give me solid.
It's like task orientated, right? Kind
of. Yes.
Got it. Okay.
Very nice. You know what time it is. So now I'm for another question.
Sustainability always comes second to short-term economic growth. He begged. Let's debate this.
Sad.
And sad, but
monthly, or even quarterly, you know, reviews, looking at the P&Ls, how the companies are performing, making short-term decisions because we missed last month's quota. We've got to double down. Things like sustainability will just keep getting pushed because, like you said, it's an investment for future savings, right? But if you're a CEO, typical CEOs have an average tenure, let's say 2.5, 3 years. They're not thinking of 25 years later. They should be, but they're not. They're thinking, how do I make sure I survive my job? Especially in an expat-driven type of world where if you lose your job, you lose your visa. Correct me if I'm wrong.
True. But you know what the difference lies is that's when sustainability is a nice add-on.
Exactly. That's
for your business.
Yeah.
But if you have a deep purpose within your company, then it's not something you add. It's deeply rooted in your company. Then it doesn't become a secondary thing. It's part of actually the way you're going to run your business and the way you make profit. There's actually a study from the McKinsey that shows that the purpose of companies with a deeply sustainability sense actually make more profit than the others. So it's not a nice to have thing. And this is all we need to change to manage your business.
Yeah.
Sustainability is not philanthropy. It's not when I have some money, I will give it and I will do something nice, even if it's long term, right? Philanthropy is very important, but sustainability is not philanthropy. It's not charity. It's something fundamental that you need to have and better make your business. That's the only way to make sure it doesn't become the second thing when there's a crisis. Actually, it's going to be your main driver with the price. So that's the way I see it.
But you agreed initially that it is
second. So in general, yes, because businesses today, how many businesses can say we are purpose-driven? Very few.
Percentage-wise, less than 10%?
In the UAE, we have BGA, Emirates Global Aluminium. They declared themselves a year ago purpose-led company. So it's deeply rooted in what they do. But I don't know many others.
It's less than 10%.
Worldwide, we have Sanofi Pharmaceutical Company, French company. They are purpose-led. Their purpose is not to exist anymore, imagine.
Yeah.
So it's coming.
I had a futurist on the show.
Oh.
Top five futurist in the world. His name is John Sane. Okay. He told me that the corporate world will cease to exist very, very soon. There will be no more companies in the next 5 to 10 years, maximum.
It's very scary.
Impossible. I see completely different.
Yeah.
For me, businesses are the future. It's just the way you do businesses to change. if you don't have a business, who's going to produce your energy? Who's going to make your table?
No, there'll be businesses. I'm talking about corporations. I'm talking about these big companies that people are sort of sign up to and join. Like, you know, when you were younger, it was like all about working at some of the...
Big thing.
Yeah, my face. Yeah. It was outside. Yeah, exactly.
But it's not the case anymore.
No, I don't agree. We need that. They are the lead.
Yeah. So he talked about three industries that are massively challenged because of AI and what's going to happen. Consultancy will no longer be around, he's saying. They're going to be one of the first to go. Accountants and lawyers, the legal, because everything that AI can do is all based on data, information, and putting strategy together. So it was a really interesting take. He said, but things like sustainability, creativity, all the areas that make us human are the ones that are going to flourish. So maybe you would like him more once you meet him, because he talks about how great that side of thing is. And being human has never been more important.
I still think you need a human touch, even in legal and consulting.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
Won't be able
to... Like, who am I to argue with the guy? I mean, I don't know. But it was an interesting conversation.
Very interesting. No, it's true. And there is the Dubai Future Forum, which is a great platform to attend every year to hear about the future and how it looks and the different opinions on the future. And depend how one question was about robotics and how they're going to take over. Right? Someone said, no, they're going to be embedded in our body.
Yeah.
We're going to have super bionic eyes. Mm-hmm. We're going to have chips in our brains. Mm-hmm. So it's not either one or the other. They're going to merge the handshake. Yeah. But, so I think things are gonna merge. AI will be embedded, but you will still need teams to work with AI. Let's see.
We shall see. And
I'm seeing how you're managing this. Is that all of them so far?
No.
There's still one more?
Yeah, that's it.
My goodness. This is the last one.
Okay, so is human laziness and cognitive dissonance the number one obstacle for change?
Is it a human condition why things are changing?
Yes, of course. Laziness, for sure. But it's also not being interested. Laziness comes from not paying interest. You know, thinking it's boring. Why should I care? So that's what we need to tackle.
That's the cognitive dissonance I was talking about. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And one campaign that Fraser has been really disrupted is the Drop It campaign that then became the Dubai Can campaign, the Dubai Parliament, which was about moving away from single-use plastic bottles, right, of water. I remember how the whole awareness it's usually about plastic bottles is like, plastic is bad and all these animals in the sea, I mean, land are dying because of plastic consumption. We changed completely the narrative. We said, yes, it's bad for the planet. It's bad for you. You, human, this is a scientific fact. How much microplastics you had in your body?
So you changed the narrative.
We changed the narrative.
Storytelling.
It's storytelling for sure. But we needed scientific information.
Hmm.
So that's what needs to be standardized, the scientific facts. Hmm. Then I can change the way I talk about it, depending on culture, the case where I am, the sensitivity.
Context.
But yeah. Have that data. That helps me come to an audience and say, look, it's not me saying that to you. This is how much you have in your brain. This is how much you have in the fetus. This is how much you have in your blood.
Yep.
What do you want to do about it? So the whole awareness would start, and I could see people coming to the room in large corporations with their phone in their hand, looking at me, you know, say, I'll never, never switch from my Evian water or whatever amazing little water. The end of the Shilta working on my future. They understand it's not about nature, because only 10% of people would care to actually change their behavior. Only 10%. The rest will feel sorry, but then back to business. No more. So I need to tell you something that's gonna affect you, your children, your father, your mother, your friends, where you understand, because we care about our health. More and more, we live in an individualistic society where it's about me, my future, longevity, health. I need to be fit.
Yeah.
So the moment I'm telling you, you're doing something every day, in the office, at the gym, in school, but it's actually damaging you, the switch was immediate. So the why should I care? Well, because it's affecting you. And that's, I think, for me and for us at Gumbook, the way we are talking to people, saying, it's about you. It's about the human species. Forget the turtle, forget the dolphin, forget the bird and the polar bear if you don't want to care. But do you care about you? Yes. Yeah. Nobody will say, I care about
you. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a great insight. I've learned so much in the last hour or so. I've got one last thing for you, which is it's a blank ball, right? So if you want to put those back in, by the way, congrats for managing to keep all eight. It's like I could, your hand will go into spasm afterwards. So this is the last one. You get to ask anything you want to ask or say anything that you haven't said that you'd want to. So the power is yours, Tatiana.
Oh, okay. I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
My question. What are you going to do starting today?
Well, let me tell you. Well, first of all, I think it's a good idea. So I'm going to go to Sports City next time I play football, which is actually supposed to be tomorrow, right? So I'm going to get my buddies together. I'm going to go march to the reception, okay? I'm going to demand them to install something that is more sustainable, friendly, eco-friendly, whatever you want to call it, for we can have drinking water without having to use plastic bottles. Great. So that's the first thing I'm going to do.
So I want to ask you to record everything. Take your phone now.
I will do that.
I want to see the reaction of your friends.
Okay.
I'm going to say that to them.
Okay.
This is what we're going to do. Okay. Second, we'll see the reaction of the manager of the...
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Are you telling him that?
Okay.
And it would be amazing,
yes,
to actually report when you install the machine.
You know what? I will do that. And that's a promise. I will do that. The second thing, well, I don't know about the machine. That's out of my hands. So I will do the filming and all that stuff. But what they do with that, I mean, I'm just a guy. Then you can absolutely do that. Sports City, we'll love to have you. The other thing that I want to do, honestly, is I'm, like I said right at the beginning of the show, I don't know much about sustainability, which is a shame. It is a shame. My wife is very much into the whole initiative. I used to be in more than the recycling side because I came from the UK. And you know, in Europe, everyone recycles everything. You've got like 15 garbage bins for like everything. But we don't really have that here. So I kind of lost the practice and the habit of it. So what I'm going to promise myself is every day I'm going to do at least one new sustainable thing every single day, whatever that is.
That's a lot.
One thing. One thing that I wasn't doing before. It's just one thing.
Every day.
Every day.
The same one or different?
No, it can be the same one.
Okay.
It can be the same one, but that I'm not doing now. You know what I mean? And then the idea is to do one more new thing every single day. And then you sort of add to it. I think if you do it in bite-sized pieces, asking people to go from one extreme to another, it's tough. But giving them a little roadmap, so you know what? All you need to do from now on, don't accept a plastic bottle. If that's it, and you want to drink water from somewhere else, then all of a sudden that's one new behavioral change. Then you add another one, right? Which could be, give me one. I don't know, but you get my point. You know what I mean? So it's just that micro little changes, all those will add up. So that's what I'm going to start doing. So
for your recycling, there are companies that come to your house and pick up your recyclables, like plastic, glass, aluminium, for free.
What are the name of the companies?
This one is Recap.
Okay.
Recap, it's you contact them, they will tell you what day they're coming, you prepare your ticket.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So for those in Dubai, is it only in Dubai or is it in other
places? No, UAE.
Well? UAE. Recap.
Recap.
Love it. Very nice. Look, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on, Tatiana. I've learned a lot, honestly. I love the passion that you have. I wish there were millions more people like you on the planet. My kids.
One more.
Yeah, we got, well, I'm getting there, bit by bit, micro steps, but. Look, I generally wish you nothing but the very, very best. I want Gumbook to be the most successful social enterprise business. I want you to impact everyone that you possibly can. And I want you to inspire change. You certainly have with me. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for wishing
you. That was my pleasure. For more information, please contact Tatiana. How can they contact you? How can they reach out to you?
So Instagram at Gumbook, GOUMBOOK.
Okay.
Of course, our website full of information on what you can do, where they can join, a lot of free things for the community.
We
just
good.
Had now a shark release.
Very nice.
In Jebel Ali. So happy to welcome children and noise children. So Gumbook, LinkedIn as well.
Beautiful.
Everywhere.
Love it. So follow Tatiana if you haven't already. Listen to everything that Jess say. Check out Goombook website. And thank you for watching. Please like, subscribe, and share. And I'll see you very soon on Luca's Inside Track.